Hello, and I would like to welcome our listeners to another edition of the Crossroads Podcast. I'm Matt O'Brien, reporter and deputy managing editor for Infralogic's North American news coverage, and I'll be your host today. It gives me a great deal of pleasure to introduce our guest, someone who's going to give us a close look at the macro tower marketplace and the corresponding carrier budget impacts, M&A, economic concerns, and more. I have with me President and CEO of Vertical Bridge, Ron Bizek. Welcome to the show, Ron.
Thank you.
I thought for today, the way we'd kick off this conversation is maybe talking about the carriers. Whenever I go to industry conferences, it's always a major topic, major theme. Last couple of years, we've seen the carriers pull back on their budgets, which obviously directly impacts the macro tower industry. I was hoping maybe if you can give us your outlook on that. It seems like these guys are, you know, the big three are lightening up on the purse strings, so to speak, allocating more budget to the wireless space. What's your take and what can we expect to see in the coming months?
Great question. I think you're right. Your read of the tea leaves is right. The carrier activity has picked up significantly from last year. In fact, you know, we're 2x the amount of leasing revenue that we've generated this year compared to the same time last year. In addition to that, there's a vast number of new towers being built throughout the country. I think many people know that we have a first of its kind JV with Verizon to build towers for them in America. We're seeing a tremendous amount of incremental activity in adding new build-to-suit sites for Verizon, and all of the other carriers are investing as well in their networks. RBC Capital puts out a report every year that estimates the number of new cell sites that will be required in the upcoming year, and they're forecasting a 70% increase year over year from 2024. So a lot of activity. I think that this persists for at least the next couple of years. We're seeing a tremendous amount of C-band densification as carriers roll out their networks, a lot of cell splitting, and some of it is also tertiary markets. What I would call your attention to is during the pandemic, where did everybody work? From home. Now, there are still people that work from home, and the carriers are addressing some of those, the homework needs, by putting more and more of their network spend closer to where people live and not necessarily at the office building.
Gotcha. I want to just pivot over to Vertical Bridge itself for a couple of minutes. How are things working out on Vertical Bridge's deal with Verizon, the tower deal that you guys struck last year with Verizon? What goals has the firm yet to achieve since striking this deal with the company?
When you do a deal of this size, you have a transition services agreement because there's a vast amount of data that has to be assimilated into your system. Imagine 4 terabits of data coming over all at once, all different documents, millions of documents that, you know, need to be put in the right places in the Vertical Bridge system so we're able to effectively operate the assets. That transition services agreement lasts 6 months. We've just extended it by 3, but we're 90% through all of the various tasks associated with the transition services agreement. The last remaining tasks will be cutting over accounts receivable and payable. So your land, paying your landlords, receiving the rents from third-party tenants. That's one of the things that we've yet to complete. And then probably most importantly, and it will be hopefully an ongoing goal of ours, is to add tenants to these towers. These towers were very lightly tenanted, 1.15 tenants per tower. Verizon wasn't truly a tower company. These were for them. These were self-built by them, although they did build them with a tremendous amount of incremental capacity. But they really weren't leasing space to others. And when they were, it wasn't as efficient as it would be if you're running a tower company like Vertical Bridge does. So adding the tenancies to the towers is job number one. That's where you get your return on that $3.3 billion investment that we made when we struck the deal with Verizon.
Sticking with Vertical Bridge, I was hoping you can give the listeners an update on your guys' equity raise process, something we've been following here at Infralogic. I'm just wondering, what kind of guidance can you give us and how things are going?
It's going really, really well. There's no shortage of interest in investing in the tower space. There never has been. It's somewhat of a scarcity value to have the opportunity to make a significant investment in such a terrific business. We're being very prescriptive about how we go about this, and it's extremely important that you get the right partner in the boardroom, right? So we're seeing a tremendous amount of interest. We're working our way through the process. I expect that it won't be too much longer before, you know, we have something maybe to talk about. So it's going really, really well.
All good things for you guys. All right. I can't wait to see what the outcome will be. I'm sure you and I will talk about it once you're able to. I'm sure it'll make for great copy. Kind of related to that, just talk more broadly about M&A, actually. Macro tower M&A has been subdued in North America for the last few years, with the exception, you know, a few recent announcements, a couple breaking news items from us. Since we've had this activity a little bit muted, where can investors find opportunities in the tower industry, maybe from an M&A perspective?
Sort of the last remaining large-scale deal with a carrier was the one we just did with Verizon. Other than that, the remaining carrier portfolio out there would be U.S. Cellular, which is around 4,500 towers. Now, U.S. Cellular has maintained that they're going to operate that business on its own after the merger's done with T-Mobile. To me, that remains to be seen. They may do that for a period of time, but you know, I'm not convinced that over time that particular portfolio won't transact. I think it probably does. But until the merger's done, until the rationalization of the assets is complete and they determine which antennas they're going to keep on which towers and the churn has worked its way through, I think it would be difficult really to see that portfolio transact in the marketplace. There are a number of other small, medium-sized companies ranging, you know, anywhere from you can have 10 towers to over 1,000 out there that could be acquired in the future. But what's happened in this business is people have pivoted from private equity to family offices to permanent capital sources. So you take CDPQ and DigitalBridge, they have much more of a longer term. They're our two largest investors, our primary investors. You see more and more of the pension funds and folks like that looking for investments. And once they're in those investments, they want to be there for a long time. So I think the opportunity for an investor is really in a situation like we're in at the moment. We're out raising capital. And also when companies that have some scale decide to recap. So recapitalizations will give you the opportunity to make significant investment in sizable tower companies. And of course, if you can make an investment in a company like Vertical Bridge, that works as well. Absent that, I think it's just a number of smaller acquisitions that could be had in the space, but then you need an operator.
Right. Just a follow-up question on the M&A point. We always see macro towers, portfolios, or even operating companies sell at these high multiples, you know, in the 30s range. Look, we're in an elevated rate environment. Do you think that, is that still true? I know the asset class is thinly trading in North America, as I pointed out a few minutes ago, but do you think we'll still see those elevated headline buyout multiples?
Yeah, we haven't seen any material change in multiples in the last 5 years, really, which was kind of surprising to me. But I think when you look at the characteristics of towers, the very long-term stickiness of the contracts that the tenants have on the towers, you think about the growth aspect of many of the towers that have come to market. You know, look at Verizon, 1.15 tenants per tower, a lot of growth left there. The investor sees its way towards buying into a stable, long-term, growing cash flow business with relatively fixed operating expenses, a one-time investment, and all of the revenue from the lease is falling straight to the bottom line.
Gotcha. Also, another follow-up question to a more transactional point of view. The financing markets, you know, not equity, but just from what you've seen, debt, you know, raising financings, whether you're pursuing an M&A deal or fresh deal or building out new assets. Do you feel like the debt markets are still open to the macro tower sector, or do you see any challenges there? Whatever you're seeing would be interesting.
Well, sure. I mean, they're open for business. Certainly not the glory days of next to zero interest rates. So there's money to be had. It's just a little bit more expensive. You know, we take the approach of setting up bespoke credit facilities that we can throw assets into, essentially let them grow cash flows, and then take them through an ABS or securitization. So that's the way we've approached it. In the ABS, you probably get the most efficient execution and the cheapest cost of debt. They're open. We'd love to see the cost of that debt come down, but for now it's stabilized, which is good.
Gotcha. Yeah. We're seeing other sectors in the digital infra industry, fiber and data centers tapping ABS more and more. And it seems like, you know, the cell tower industry was the first one there, again, within the digital infrastructure marketplace. You know, I see these guys doing it, and it just seems, you know, they're taking a chapter out of that playbook of refinancings and keeping your cost of capital structure low.
We're actually going to launch an ABS in this month, and we hope to be closed by the middle of August. So we're going to be hitting the ABS market. I saw Symphony came out a couple of days ago, and they're tapping the ABS as well. You made an interesting point. The ABS market was flooded with data center, right? The first tower issuance, and I wouldn't call Symphony necessarily a straight down the middle tower issuance because they have ground rights interest in that particular ABS. This will be one of the first ones in quite some time. And I think the appetite for a tower ABS at the moment is pretty significant, right? It's a safe haven, if you will.
Right. Insurance companies, infra funds are all what your typical investors in those instruments, I would gather.
Yes.
Permanent forms of capital. Yeah, gotcha. Interesting. Are private placements, you know, some a debt instrument, tower operators? I can't recall seeing any, but is that something that could be used, you feel, in your industry?
I think the cost of the equity would be too expensive. I know of some that have been done, but not at any scale years ago. But I don't think that that's something that, you know, you would see unless it was a very small private placement, a small investment.
Let's turn our attention to macroeconomics. As we see, look, you can pick up the newspaper any day. There's always headlines, headwinds in economic landscape. We're talking about tariffs, talking about a labor market. Rates, you know, take your pick. More generally speaking, federal government policy reforms, which are getting all the headlines. What challenges are you and your team at Vertical Bridge concerned about, more of the trends at large, if any?
Well, you know, we're in a very capital intensive business, as you know, and rates have a meaningful impact on investor returns. So we're being very judicious with our use of capital, our underwriting process, you know, what our tolerance is for returns and picking the right acquisitions to do and also the right sites to build. From a regulatory perspective, it would be helpful in the industry to take out some of what might be considered unnecessary steps in order to permit a tower. So the typical time frame to permit a tower is from 15 to 18 months. The carriers would like to see some of that time shrunk, reduced, right? And in order to do that, some of the federal regulations that are imposed upon the industry would need to be adjusted. The government is discussing that at the moment. So to the extent that some of those steps could be removed or at least shortened, I think it would benefit the advancement of the wireless carriers, of the industry itself. And as far as other regulatory issues, it would be really nice if we could get some spectrum in the hands of our customers. And there's not any near-term spectrum forecasted on the horizon. Some say 5 years, could be seven. Now, for us, we kind of win either way. Absent spectrum, the only way to provide the service to the customer is to densify the network, the type of service that they're looking for. But even when there is new spectrum, we've always seen a corresponding investment in the network. The spectrum doesn't necessarily sit on a shelf fallow. They put it to use, and that benefits towers and the rest of the infrastructure ecosystem.
Gotcha. I want to go back to that point you were making. I guess it was permitting reform, right? That it can extend the length of certain projects. Probably true for any infrastructure project you're embarking on, if it's a road or whatever have you. But is it more of an issue at the state level, or you see more impacts at the federal level?
It can be both. So we have NEPA and SHPO and, you know, a bunch of hoops that we need to jump through. For example, we couldn't build a tower in California until the sand fleas had hatched out of the ground. I'm not kidding. There's some unnecessary steps that we unfortunately have to take in order to check the particular boxes. And it's both federal and state. It's better than it was. I've been doing this for 35 years. It's better in some instances than it was because there's at least a defined process. But there are a lot of little steps along the way that you have to take.
Sand fleas.
Sand fleas, turtles.
I think I have my next idea for my next story. So there we go. No, gotcha. You know, one thing I want to ask you about tariffs.
Yes.
Are you guys seeing any additional costs being built up in your projects or even operationally because of tariffs?
Yeah, at the moment, it's been an insignificant increase in steel costs. And that's really where we would see the most effect. But from a supply chain perspective, we have had a couple of very minor issues with getting steel delivered from Canada, for example. So with the tariffs, have the tariffs affected our cost base? Not that much, but they have some effect on supply chain. So we're shifting as much as we can to tariff-friendly places and getting as much steel as we can from the U.S. as well. One of the things we benefit from is scale. So we tie all of our steel purchases to the indices, and that way it can't fluctuate up or down too much. So we win in the good days and we share some of the risk in the bad days. And because of our scale and the number of towers we build every year, we pre-buy and lock in pricing, similar to what, you know, Southwest did when they started pre-buying fuel and they were able to keep their fares really low. So we lock into that price. If the tariff goes up, we're protected.
Yeah, gotcha. No, great, great. All right. Hey, listen, I think that's it. All this was great. Ron, I want to thank you for participating. So thank you and the team at Vertical Bridge. And thank you, listeners, for listening to this week's Crossroads podcast. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and share. Well, that's it for this week. Don't forget to tune in next time. Till then, take care.